Welcome back to the podcast that makes you faster. Today, we have a Swiss Inside podcast premiere. But first of all, JP, man, how are you?
I'm really good, thanks. Hello, everybody out there. I'm super stoked, super excited today to have a real world tour rider in our podcast that can actually tell us what it's like in the reality, not from our amateur punter point of view. So it's going to be really cool to get some insights. I'll let you do the introduction to who it is today.
Yeah, we are thrilled to welcome Larry Warbass from Decathlon AG Désert La Mondiale to our little podcast living room. Hey man, how are you doing?
Yeah, so, thanks guys. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. nice. I've been listening to the podcast recently, and I'm also a fan of anything that makes me faster. So I like all the tips and tricks, and I'm happy to be here with you guys today.
Well, that's cool. And we're actually going to ask you that question later on. So spoiler alert, we're going to find out, you know, how you apply aerodynamics, or, you know, what, is it important for you? How do you apply it? But we'll get to that later. First of all, I think, you know, just for those out there that don't know you personally, maybe give us a little bit of an insight, who you are, you know, where you come from. I think we know from the USA, but, you know, where you come from in terms of your history in cycling, what brought you to the world tour in Europe, just a little bit about you, your background. Yeah, just go for it.
Yeah, I'm an American pro cyclist, and like you said, I race for Decathlon AG Désert La Mondiale. And yeah, this is my 12th year as a pro, so I've been around for quite a while now. Turned pro with BMC Racing Team in 2013, and I went to a few different teams after that. I was on IM Cycling and then Aqua Blue Sport before coming here. And now I've been on this team for, this is my sixth year on the team. Been a while now. I started out as a kid, I started out mountain bike racing and switched to maybe the road when I was 16 years old. And it was never something I ever thought to do as a profession. I thought I'd go into business or something like that. And I was going to university. And I just realized that I really enjoyed cycling a lot more than I enjoyed studying. And I thought, well, if I could make a living out of this, why shouldn't I try? And so, I gave it a go. I took a semester off university and had a really good season and ended up signing a pro contract. So, I never looked back, and here we are many years later. So that's kind of a short, quick background on me. I guess I'm kind of like an all around rider, more of a domestique on the team, but yeah, I'm pretty good in the climbs, not too bad in the TTs. I just can't sprint. So.
Well, you can't do it all. And, I think for everybody out there, you know, the role of riders like you is so important in a team, to support the rest of the team, to support maybe the lead riders or the sprinters, whoever it is going for the win in the etap. So, what's it like for you? I think one of the first things that two questions I'm going to bundle into one, maybe to mention that, you know, you say the word domestique, but it's such an important role in the team, but perhaps sometimes a bit of a thankless role. Like, how do you see it? Like, how is it within the team? How is it for you? You invest all your time to help maybe one or two chosen other riders have their successes. What's that like for you? Is it, where do you get your satisfaction? Is it appreciated within the team by the other riders? Of course, you know, just to give some insights in that respect.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I would say, if the leaders are winning, it's always appreciated. If the leaders aren't winning, sometimes it gets kind of overlooked because you could do sort of the same job. And if the guy doesn't win, then, you know, it's kind of almost falls on everyone, which can be tough. But I would say, like, you're always appreciated by your teammates, you know, if you, you know, are a good help. I always feel really appreciated by the teammates usually by the team, but it's like if the team has a rough, you know, rough year, rough go, or a rough period, it kind of falls on everyone. Even if you do your job the best, it's not always as visible if you're not at the front of the race, sort of, you know? So this year it's been good because we've been sort of taking a lot of races by the horns. And so then you're a lot more present and, you know, you're a lot more sort of visible in the race, whereas like maybe you could do the same job, but you know, if you're not really at the front of the race or taking the race on, I guess they see it less, or I mean, people in general see it less, not just the team or whatever. So yeah, it's interesting. It's different, but I enjoy it. And I really enjoy, I mean, I enjoy riding my bike and going to the races and being a part of it. And it's also cool now, like, I guess being one of the more experienced riders on the team, I can share a lot of my wisdom and knowledge with like the young guys. And that's cool too. So, you know, some of the guys, they're really interested and willing to learn, and that's cool. So I really like helping other guys just in terms of like, yeah, how to read a race and, you know, what to do, how to save energy, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to underpin, you know, us being involved a little bit on the strategy side in sort of racing and racing strategy. I can't underpin how important it is for a team that, you know, it takes a whole team to win a stage and to win a grand tour, you know, and, you know, the contributions of, you know, I would say the leader is the one that doesn't necessarily work the hardest. You know, I think you guys, you know, guys in your role, Larry, True. Are the guys who really do the hard yards and make it possible. So it's cool to have that sort of insight. And talking about the successes of the team this year, like you said, you know, it's been a big change. I almost could say a step change. I think we got a message from the team this morning saying 10 race wins so far this year, fourth overall in the UCI team standings, which is pretty big step up from last year. The team's predominantly similar to how it's been in the past. Biggest change has been, of course, the introduction of Decathlon as title sponsor, and of course, change of equipment, Van Rysel bikes, Swiss side wheels, Van Rysel helmets. You know, there's been quite a lot of change. You know, how has the change of equipment been for you? Did you notice a difference? How's it affecting your racing? You know, what's on the equipment side? You know, we deliberately said we don't want you to plug Swiss side wheels. It's all about being authentic. Feel free to make comments on them, of course. But no, but genuinely, you know, we're keen to hear, you know, how much did that equipment change play a role, and how does it at least feel subjectively from your point of view, racing this year on different equipment?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been awesome so far. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's like you said, I don't think there have been that many changes in the team, as in the base and the structure. So yeah, I mean, I think one thing we've all sort of come to realize is, I think, yeah, the equipment's playing a huge part in our success this year. And that's really cool. And I mean, personally, I'm someone who I've always been very interested and invested in equipment. And, you know, I think sometimes for the team, I've also been seen as a bit of a pain in the ass because I don't care too much about equipment. But yeah, I mean, I think the cool thing is now, a lot of guys are realizing how much equipment can make a big difference, you know, in terms of performance. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, right when I got on the bike, you know, I could feel a big difference. And, you know, I guess like you said, I think the thing is with equipment, it's also a package. You know, a bike is a package. You know, it's the wheels, it's the tires, it's the frame, it's the group set, you know, it's really, really everything. And so, you know, you could have a great bike with average pieces around and it's not a great bike anymore. Or, you know, you could have an average bike with amazing things around it and it's a great bike. So when you have everything sort of built together, working together, and all the little details are dialed, like, which I think is the case with us this year. You know, I mean, awesome. I mean, really, yeah, I've been a big fan of your guys' wheels. Then the bike is awesome. You know, the group set's amazing, and the tires are incredible. So all that together just makes it makes a huge difference. And it's something I can feel, you know, in the races. It's like, for my role, for example, you know, if I'm going to be sitting in the wind, it's like I can sit in the wind so much longer because, you know, I think the bike is significantly faster than what, you know, what I've ridden in the past. And so just these little things that, you know, it just makes a huge difference. And even, you know, the tires, for example, like, you know, I would say with the Continental tires, I have way more confidence in the wet and, you know, just all these little details that, you know, if then you're descending better, you're going to save more energy on the descent. You're going to be further in front. So it's just all these things add up and then it makes a huge difference at the end, even if they're like small little details. So yeah, no, really, I've been and I'm not saying this just because like, you know, you guys are our sponsors and whatever, I'm on this podcast, but I actually really do believe that. And yeah, I'm pretty frank. So yeah, we've all been big fans. So it's
That's
cool.
Great. And I'm going to have two further questions. First, I just want to underpin that, like, you know, we've worked with a lot of brands developing bikes. Yeah, lots of bikes that are used in the World Tour have been developed, say, from us in a collaboration. But I was always really, I was incredibly surprised by how good the Van Rysel guys were from day one. You know, it's been over 2 years we've been working together now. And I remember day one thinking, oh, yeah, these guys, they're newbies. They don't really, they're not going to be at that kind of high-end level. But to see the level of engineering they have within Decathlon itself, and just the willingness, the openness, and the talent of the engineers, it's no wonder for me in the end that they've come up with such an amazing bike. And the RCR bike that you guys are using at the moment, we weren't involved in that. So that was a collaboration with Honora, which is the French aerospace agency. But, you know, the global package, you know, we've had the bike in the wind tunnel. The numbers are amazing. We've seen the stiffness figures, you know, so it really is a great bike. And, yeah, and it's really interesting for us to sort of hear from you. And, you know, you're not the only one saying it's been, you know, a real step change. And I'm actually also really interested because, like you said earlier in the podcast, you've got a lot of experience in the World Tour. Did you say 13 years? As a pro?
Yeah, it was my 12th year, yeah.
12th year, right. So, you know, you've gone from the days of, you know, tubular tires, and now we've moved all the way through to tubeless clincher tires. You know, like, you know, how was that transition? Because I know from, you know, the work we worked with INEOS for a long time, there was a big resistance sort of 4 or 5 years ago, this sort of trend to go across to tubeless away from tubular, although, you know, there was a lot of data on the table to show that it was the thing to do. Now I'd say, you know, 95% of the riders are using tubeless clinchers. You know, how was that for you, just in interest, and what's your sort of perception nowadays on the tires? You know, you mentioned the Conti tires, the GP5000 STRs are good from your perspective all round. Yeah, how's that? How was that? You know, just talking about tires, maybe briefly.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because I remember actually when I was on BMC. So, yeah, my first year pro, we were on 23s. And then we had those Continental tubulars with like all the dots on them, you know? And yep. I remember at the end of that year, it must have been maybe in the Tour de France, the 25s came out with like the little slick part in the middle, those Continental tubulars. And I remember, you know, I went to the Tour of Utah, which was going to be like the first race after the tour. And like, so we had this new equipment and no one wanted to ride the 25s because they're like, oh, that must be way too slow, you know? So I was like, oh, sweet. You know, like I'll ride them, you know? And so I rode the, you know, we had maybe the Durace C50 wheels with, you know, so they were like slightly wider. And then we had 25 tubular tires with a slick part in the middle. And I was the only rider on the team who actually wanted to ride these tires because like everyone thought like, oh, 25 must be way too slow, you know? So then I remember, you know, I just remember that like change. And I remember being like, oh, these are awesome. Like this is way better. But, you know, I don't remember. Maybe it took another more than a year probably for people to sort of really switch over to 25s. And then it's interesting because I was on Aqua Blue Sport. And I don't know if you remember, but we had these 3T bikes that were like single chainring.
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They were, yeah. Yeah, only design about. So yeah, we didn't have even there wasn't even a mount for a front derailleur, and then the bike was designed around either 28 or 30 tires. And okay, we had our issues with the bike and stuff. I think if it would have come out, if the SRAM would have either come out a year earlier or the bike would have come out a year later, so we could have had SRAM red with the one bike, it probably would have been a great setup, great bike. But we had like the red with the single chain ring setup that exists now, that didn't exist then. So we kind of had like very average stuff on the bike, and that led to more problems. But the one thing I remember from that year was I remember going, wow, okay, I don't know about any of this other stuff, but one thing I'm 100% sure is that everyone will be on 28 tires soon, So I remember, we did that whole season. We were one of the only team with disc brakes, and then we were definitely the only team that was riding 28 tires in the races. And I remember just thinking, like, 28 tires are incredible. Like, and maybe even in training we rode 30s. So I was like, 100% everyone will be on 28 in like 2 years, and maybe even 30s, And sure enough, like shortly after, everyone was on 28. But the funny thing is, when everyone was on 28, I was back on like 26 and stuff, and I was like, oh. But yeah, then I also remember when we started, we had like the newer Campagnolo wheels. I think it was the first year when we had BMC was 2021, and I was the only guy on the team who wanted to ride tubeless. So pretty much every race, I was the only guy riding tubeless, and everyone else was riding tubular because they're like, oh, it feels slower, Like tubeless feels slower. And I'll never forget in the Giro in 2021, it was only like Matej Mohorovic and myself who were riding tubeless, and everyone else in the whole peloton was on tubular. And so I just, I remember thinking, I was like, I don't know, we had this conversation in the peloton one day. I'm like, I'm sure it's faster, but it's like it's hard to, I mean, I haven't been able to like test or quantify it or whatever. And sure enough, then shortly after everyone was on tubeless. And then the other funny thing also to thinking of wheels and tires is then we had these clinchers with Pirelli maybe 2 years ago, and they were a lot lighter and they felt way better. And so and the rolling resistance was supposed to be very close to the tubeless, so we were riding these a lot. But we only had one set. The only set that was like left for the Tour de Suisse was on like a set of 60s, and so no one would touch them except for me. So I remember everyone made fun of me for doing the entire Tour de Suisse on a set of 60 wheels. And then it's just funny because now we almost only ride 60s. So yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a funny evolution of all these things, but yeah.
It sounds like you're deep inside of you might be a triathlete because road cyclists aren't
Yeah,
early adopters,
exactly.
and you're like tech, and you're one step ahead of the game. So it's actually, to be honest, it's really refreshing to hear that. I don't know, to speak with a world tour cyclist who's so open to new technologies and to try and to be open, because I've had so many conversations in the last years with various world tour riders and teams and DSs trying to with numbers and facts on the table and laws of physics to back me up to try and explain why something is a faster configuration, and to see then the massive lag and latency to adopt that. And like you say, now everyone's adopted it, but no, it's really cool to hear that that you're on the forefront of trying stuff out and yeah, trying to evaluate if it's better.
I also have one other. I forgot this part was I remember also when I was on BMC, and I was 100% sure that we needed to ride like lower tire pressure, and I remember in the rain, like the guy from Continental said you can't ride less than 8 bar, and I was like, we have to ride less than 8 bar, and so then a big argument in the team or whatever about like. The guy never wanted less than 8, and he's like, oh, it'll be fine in the rain and this and that. And I was like 100% sure that lower tire pressures would be better. And I remember, like, I don't know, I listened to some podcast that, did all this testing with, different tire pressures. And I remember, I sent it to the performance guy on the team at the time, Alan Piper, who he later went on to UAE and he's been in quite a few teams. And I remember we got in this big debate, and I was 100% convinced that we needed to ride lower tire pressures, and he still didn't believe me. And yeah, well, sure enough, all these years later, we found out the lower tire pressure is definitely the way to go. But yeah.
Well, Larry, what I can do is I can promise you from our side at Swissside, and our role in this is to deliver numbers so that there doesn't have to be these debates. There's facts, there's numbers, tests, and you guys can. And I think, you know, at the moment, you're probably running sort of on the 20, on the 25s, you're probably running like 5.5 bar to 6 bar pressure most of the time. So, yeah, it's kind of in line with probably what you were thinking back then.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, yeah, I mean, yeah, now we're riding significantly less than we ever would have thought, I think. So that's cool. Yeah.
Cool. Nice one. Yeah, hey, awesome. We're going to get to the juicy question, topic of aerodynamics. Of course, it's something that's really close to our hearts at Swissside. So yeah, you know, for you personally, okay, we've just learned that you're an early adopter, so of new technologies. So you've probably had this on your radar a long time before maybe some cyclists. But for you, you know, when did aerodynamics become? When did it come onto your radar? Maybe just sort of in your history, and nowadays, how important is it for you? And yeah, let's start with those two questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think even from quite a young age, I was aware that aerodynamics were important. So I remember when I was an under 23, I did the national championships time trial, and I did probably some of the best numbers that I've even still to this day done in a time trial. And I think I was fifth, and I was so devastated and shocked that I wasn't any better. That from then on, I realized, like, okay, obviously my position's terrible. I need to do something about this. So yeah, as an under 23, I actually paid to go to the wind tunnel. Like in the US, I drove like 14 hours, went to the wind tunnel, drove 14 hours home, and that was the first time because I was like, okay, I know this is really important. I know this is an investment in my career and my performance. I think maybe I didn't get directly results right after, but I think it's always something since then I knew it was super important. And I knew, you know, like, I guess then I got lucky when I was NeoPro, I went with a team to the wind tunnel. We did even track testing. So we were already then like thinking about these things. And I guess at the time I was not aware at how much of an advantage as a team we had. Yeah, like I was on BMC at the time. We probably had some of the fastest bikes, equipment, skin suits, all that. You know, I mean, I would say, you know, we were sponsored by Pearl Izumi, which at the time was probably making one of the faster skin suits. You know, it was kind of like, I wasn't aware that like we had quite a lot of advantages over other teams at that time. So I knew it was super important, but I guess I kind of like just assumed it was normal for everyone. And yeah, then I guess, so on the TT, I always knew it was super important. And then it wasn't until maybe like, maybe 2018, 2019, I started to realize how important it was just like in a road race as well. And so, okay. That one by bike that we had, the one thing I can very much say about it is that it was very fast. Like I could very much feel the difference when you touched the wind. It was a fast bike. And like, I could tell that you saved a lot of energy. Now, okay, it was super heavy and, you know, had all these other issues, but I was aware then. And then, yeah, I think it was 2019. I stumbled upon, I started to follow a little bit like Hub Watt Bike, the track team. And then I stumbled upon like Dan Bigham's blog, and he had this whole, you know, chart written out about the savings. I don't know. It was like aerodynamic savings and then in different scenarios. So I don't know if it was like, maybe he had different wheels, you know, different frames, this, that. So say you save 10 watts when you're when you're alone, like by yourself, then it was like, okay, with two people, four people, eight person breakaway, maybe 20 man group, and then the Peloton. And then I was like, I was so dumbfounded by how, like, you know, when you're in the Peloton, I think the general thinking before was that, well, if you're in the Peloton, aero doesn't matter, you know? And this article made me realize, like, I don't know, it still matters. At least, say if you're saving 10 watts when you're alone, maybe you're saving 5 watts when you're in the Peloton. So,
absolutely,
you know, yep. I don't know, I can't remember exactly the numbers, but I remember like seeing this and just my mind was like blown, you know? And I was like, okay, wow. So like aerodynamics are super important. And so then, I don't know, that from then on, I really started thinking about all this stuff. Like, you know, even when I was doing my efforts, I was thinking like, okay, rather than like just shooting for a certain like watt number, I'd be like, I want to do it in like the most aerodynamic position. And like, okay, if I'm sacrificing a little bit of watts, it's more important that I'm like focusing on like, you know, my position, and the watts will come after, you know? And so it's just all these little things. And from then on, I was like, okay, now I really want to dial in all these little things. And still, I mean, I haven't done it yet, but I would like to do track testing or wind tunnel testing on the road bike, because I'm sure that's something that like we're all leaving a lot on the table there. And it's shocking to me that like teams still haven't like fully implemented this, you know, for all their riders, because I mean, whatever. I mean, last year I did almost 90 days of racing or something, and it's like, you know, 83 of those days were probably on a road bike, right? Yet for some reason we only invest on aerodynamic testing in TT. So, you know, I don't know. For me, I'm just like, there's definitely a big there's a gap there. And I feel like we can exploit that. But yeah.
You're so right. And it's really funny to really think about that. Just like you said, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, all the testing we do with the teams, you know, we've done in the past with the teams has been uniquely TT. And, yeah, you know, you just said, you know, you're spending 90%+ of your racing on the road bike. And especially for you, you know, that's where the race is won or lost. And, you know, especially for you, one of the riders who's going to be put out there on the front, out in the wind, to push the hole and create the opportunities and help your teammates. Like it's even more important that a rider like you is optimized on the road bike aerodynamically. So I think that's really great input. I'm going to take that and push it with the team, because you're right. It's where it should be at. Yeah.
Oh, they're going to hate me even more now.
you're right. I'll say Larry said.
Yeah.
Hey, but some practical examples, because I know listeners love and amateurs love to know, okay, when you say you get into an aero position, you know, okay, I've got many things I've tested, but from your experience, what do you do as a rider? So like you say, when you're doing your efforts, or when you know you're going to be in the front of a breakaway and you're doing the effort, you know, what does your aero position look like on a road bike?
So yeah, I would say like already, I mean, I think I have a pretty quick position, because like, yeah, I mean, even just riding next to other guys, I think I do quite a bit less watts than usually guys next to me, but I'm already kind of like long and low, just in general in my normal position. But I would say for me, the fastest, that I feel is like, you know, sort of the pup, well, whatever, not puppy paws, but you know, like hands on the hoods, and then,
like horizontal forearms. Yeah.
Exactly. Horizontal forearms. For me, that feels a lot faster than even in the drops. And it's pretty easy for me to get pretty tight in that position. And then say if I'm in a breakaway or if I'm on the front, but you know, like not next to a bunch of people or have to really be focused on the road, then, you know, like I'll try to drop my head down too. So, you know, I guess just kind of like this.
And I would say position on the road.
Yeah, exactly. I have a pretty flat back, and I think I can get pretty compact. So
that's.
I'm also like, I don't know why, but naturally I'm very, very flexible just by nature. So that is helpful.
It's a big help.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the things we were discussing beforehand with Daniel. We were sort of like saying, okay, straight away it looks, you know, it sounds
you know, you understand aero, you're really investing in getting in the compact positions and so on. But of course, you know, there's always compromise, you know, comfort, power output. You mentioned it before. So, you know, I guess, you know, how do you see that sort of compromise? You know, you mentioned before you're doing your efforts and you're putting yourself in that compact aero position. And then even if the watts drop off a little bit, I guess you can look at your speed. Is your speed higher than if you're in a higher position? But as well, like you say, if you're training in that position, you're probably going to, you know, hopefully be able to, you know, train new muscles and be able to generate similar watts to what you did before. So, like, how do you approach that compromise between, yeah, aero comfort, you know, energy use as well? Like, how long can you be in that sort of aero puppy pose kind of flat arm position before you get, like, really tired?
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to do it a bit in training. So, yeah, I guess if we're talking about aero versus comfort, for me, it's like, it's just pure performance, right? So 100% aero. So if I'm thinking like on my TT bike or whatever, right, I'm going to try to find the fastest position possible and then I'll adapt to the position, you know, and I'm sure I'll be able to get to the same point in terms of power, as long as I train enough. And so, yeah, that's what I would say. And then in terms of like, yeah, this puppy pause position. So if I'm like in a breakaway, I guess, you know, when I'm on the front, then I'll be like this. But, you know, say that pull maybe lasts 30 seconds to a minute, you know, and then I just try to like be conscious of like, okay, you know, relax a little bit when you're in the back, you know, try to like, you know, I guess like the closer I get to the front, the more aggressive I get. And then the closer I get to the back, the less aggressive I get, you know, just to try to like keep it balanced and, you know, keep it a bit fresh. So I'm not like, so I can still walk the next day, you know, but yeah. So I think the thing is in training, I try to do it enough so that like when it comes to the races, I'm adapted enough to the position that I'm able to hold it for a decent period of time.
Cool. Sounds awesome. Yeah, maybe, I mean, the next thing we're thinking, you know, you're only 33, but, you know, you can look back on a pretty long career now. You must have had so many experiences, you know, along the way. You know, what are the highlights that you sort of see in your career so far? What are the, whether they be, I mean, highlights or lowlights, you know, we want to, you know, this is about the reality of being a World Tour rider or a pro rider. What are the things that stand out in your career so far for you? It can be high, low, or anything in between.
I mean, definitely for me, probably like the biggest highlight was when I won a stage of the Tour de Suisse in 2017. And for me, that was like sort of, yeah, that was probably definitely the biggest highlight because, yeah, no, I guess it was kind of like the confirmation that, you know, like I belonged in the pros sort of, you know, I guess I had been, you know, in the World Tour and then that year I dropped down a level to Aqua Blue, which was a pro continental team. And yeah, I guess then I won a World Tour race my first year, not in the World Tour. And for me, that was like really huge. And, you know, I guess I'm always someone who like, I work really hard and I really kind of give everything like, I give, you know, in cycling, it's like 110%. And so that was sort of just, yeah, the culmination of like years and years of hard work and sacrifice. And so that was just super cool. So that really, really meant a lot to me. So I guess, yeah, that to me was probably still the highlight, of my career to this day. And the low light, probably, you know, one of the crashes, you know, I guess like that same year I was in the Vuelta and I was in super good shape. And then like maybe a week in, yeah, we were like in the gutter and there was a guy, we were in the middle of nowhere, but there was a guy like riding his bike down the road, saw the Peloton coming, and then jumped off his bike and like left his bike in the road. Anyway, you know, like a few guys in front, like missed it. Then the guy in front of me clipped the bike with his shoe and then the bike like went horizontal. And then I just hit this bike at like 60k an hour, and then flew over the handlebars and like broke both my wrists.
Oh shit!
So that was probably like the low light, because yeah, I guess I was in super good shape and I didn't really get to use it. But yeah, I think probably just anytime, yeah, you have a crash that puts you out for a while. Those have been sort of the low lights for me. But I've been pretty lucky throughout my career that I haven't had too many bad crashes. So
yeah, I mean, that's.
I was wondering.
You go.
I was wondering, do you guys ever have no fear of crashing, or is this a feeling you always have in your mind when you start a race?
Yeah, I think there are some guys who probably have no fear, but that's not good. So yeah, I it's something I'm always thinking about, and I guess it is one of those things. It's kind of like a cost benefit analysis of risk taking. You know, it's like, okay, there are certain times, you know, say you're alone off the front in the breakaway going for the stage win. Okay, maybe then you take all the risks, right? You know,
Race
but
face.
If you're in the peloton, huh?
You get the race face, the race head on, and it's just like all out, whatever.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly. But I think, yeah, if you're in the peloton or, you know, it's not like a super critical moment, then, you know, you try to like mitigate the risk of it. You know, I mean, so whether that's leaving a little bit of a gap, but then the problem is, you know, we talk about sometimes we try to leave, you know, like a distance de sécurité, but like the problem is, if you leave a little gap, there's always someone who's going to jump over you, and you're like, okay, well, that totally ruins the whole idea that I'm going for here. But I think you have to measure the risk, and I try to be measured and only really take maximum risks when I need to.
I mean, yeah. I think it's a really interesting topic. I mean, we don't want to open up a massive rabbit hole here, but it's something I've been discussing a lot in, because, you know, we're involved in everything from helmet to textile development and whatever. And there's a lot of discussion at the moment about safety for the riders. And, you know, in my previous career in Formula One, we went through, you know, periods where cars had no head protection. Now the cars have got head protection for the drivers. It's the same in IndyCar and in the US series, and you know, it's a massive step forward. And at the beginning, the drivers were really against it because it impacted visibility, and they didn't. But ultimately, it saves lives. And there's a big topic at the moment surrounding, you know, you just sort of take a step back and you go, you highly talented. You know, you've invested your whole lives to get to where you are, and ultimately you're pummeling down, you know, mountain passes with terrible roads at 100 kilometers an hour with Lycra and a bit of foam on your head.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of crazy when you sort of step back and think about it, and you think, okay, in any motorcycle rider would have a full face helmet, would have leathers, would have, you know, proper protection in there. Nowadays there's airbag systems even for motorcycle riders and whatever. So there seems to be a gap between what you guys are doing. But of course, you know, I've had a chat with a few riders, and it's like, it's clear that any safety measures you bring are going to impact comfort, performance, aerodynamic performance, weight, these sorts of things. So it sounds like it's something at some point that the UCI is just going to have to impose on everyone. But it would be interesting just to get a feeling for, you know, Like Daniel said, you know, do you have fear? And, you know, I think at least for me, I know as I've gotten older, I think a little bit more about the consequences of these things. You know, where would you be in terms of, and I'm not wanting to put you on the spot on this at all, but like, you know, would you embrace more safety type apparel, maybe with anti-abrasion, maybe with some light shells in there? But of course, it's going to be impact on heat, you know, on you know, cooling, there's going to be impact on comfort, possibly aero. You know, how do you feel about that kind of topic, maybe just really briefly from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they implement it universally, that's great. You know, I mean, I have nothing against that. You know, I think anything that's going to make it safer for everyone, that's cool. The only thing that I'm kind of against, and I assume you guys would be too, but like, is, you know, I don't know, some talk now of like, oh, we need to slow the speeds. I mean, that's fine if you slow some other way, but, you know, I don't think like, you know, I don't know, banning certain, like, I don't know, they're saying like, oh, you know, I don't know, go to smaller chain rings or this or that or the other thing. It's like, I don't think that's necessarily the answer, because like, you know, I just don't think there should be a reverse of technology. That's all. I think like technology is one of the coolest parts of our sport. And I just don't see any good reason for going backwards in terms of technology. But I think adding something that would help security, like, yeah, I don't know, there's some anti-abrasion things or certain, yeah, I don't know if they could do something with the helmets or you know, I don't know what else. But yeah, I think one of the most dangerous things about our sport also is that not only are we going so fast, are we, you know, wearing Lycra and this and that, but it's like we're racing, you know, most of these races are 200 kilometers. Yes, the roads are clean. You're still open to the environment. You know, like there's nothing stopping a deer from running out in the middle of the road. You know, it's like, you know, there's, they can't check every single hole over the 200 kilometers, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, there's so many variables that go into, like a bike race. And I think that's part of the reason that makes it so dangerous. But I don't know if there is a solution for that.
I mean, I've got to say, just to give my, two cents worth, I'm fully share your opinion in that, you know, we don't want to slow technology. Technology is great. It's part of the sport. It's part of the passion. It's part of the reason why people find cycling so cool. And at the same time, we've got great technologies that can be implemented for safety. So, and like you said, you can't put in place a regulation for any situation. So what you need to do is deal with, okay, how do we just provide the rider more protection in any scenario? It can be if the deer crosses the road. You know, you can crash at 50 kilometers an hour and still hurt yourself quite badly, like you know. So I think it's sort of looking at, okay, what solutions can we bring that can aid in the biggest percentage of situations and do something like that. And I think it then brings, again, just brings new technology, and then we'll optimize that technology also for aerodynamics, also for speed, also for cooling, and it just brings the whole sport forward. So, yeah, enough about that. But I think it's interesting just to raise this topic of safety, because it seems to be creeping out of the woodwork now, and I think it's probably time.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Maybe just to wrap things up, Daniel, you've got...
Yeah. So many, so interesting things and insights. Thank you so much. I'm just sitting here relaxing and listening, and I'm just blown away by all the insights and all the stories you're telling. Maybe just one, a bit more, private question, if you could, with that to close the podcast. Are you currently, or actually live your dream? Is this, the life you aimed for as you were a 5 year old, Larry sitting on a bicycle, or,
Yeah, no, I think, like I said before, was actually, I never really thought to be a pro cyclist. I mean, when I was a kid, I actually wanted to be like a pro basketball player, but that didn't last very long. but yeah, then I don't know if it was just, I was a bit of a realist, or, you know, it wasn't really ever something that my family would have said would have been really an opportunity. So it wasn't really something I thought about when I was a kid. But yeah, once I decided that it was what I wanted to do, I went pretty full in. And I would say that, like, yeah, for the most part, I would be living my dream, I guess. You know, like, I guess I really love being a pro cyclist. I love waking up and riding my bike. I love going out training. I love trying to get the most out of myself. I don't always love trying to be super lean, you know. I mean, I really like to eat, so you know, if there wasn't the whole, like, you know, trying to be lean part of pro cycling, I'd be okay with that. But yeah, you know, I think I really do love what I do, and I love most of it. You know, I mean, yeah, sometimes when the weather sucks and you don't really want to go outside, or you know, you're in the mountains and through the Alps and it's like 2 degrees and raining the entire day, like, yeah, that's not very fun, but it's worth those sacrifices for the benefits, you know. And yeah, it's just, yeah, I think, yeah, I had a conversation with my girlfriend recently when I was saying, like, oh yeah, I'm really, like, I'm looking forward to, I don't know, going out and doing my efforts tomorrow, doing my ride. And she's like, wow, that's actually nice. Really cool. She's like, I can't say I'm like looking forward to going to work tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm very fortunate. I feel very fortunate to be able to do what I do and to be in the position I'm in. It's a privilege.
That's awesome.
Super cool. That's the best answer.
Yeah. And like, you know, just to sort of feedback to the young aspiring kids out there or young cyclists. I mean, probably a question you get all the time, but you know, what type of advice would you give young up and coming cyclists to, you know, with regards to being a world, you know, pro cyclist or getting into breaking into professional racing?
I think it'd definitely be, yeah, just keeping it fun and not being too serious too soon. You know, I think like, there's always time to be more serious in the future. And, you know, I think the way you're going to make it the furthest in the sport is if you really enjoy doing it and, you know, enjoy taking part in it every day, because then it's going to be easier to train more, you know, train longer, whatever. Like, you know, the more fun you're having, probably the more successful you're going to be, because, yeah, if you're trying to be already a slave to the watts and the power meter and, you know, the coach and the trainings when you're already like a junior, I don't think that's necessarily the answer. I think, you know, just trying to keep it fresh and fun. And, you know, even us pros, like, I mean, we go out and we ride with our friends all the time, right? You know, it's like, I would say half the time, okay, if you have like, today I had full gas intervals for pretty much the whole training session. So then, that didn't make sense to ride with someone. But pretty much every other day, if it fits with my training, I try to, you know, ride with a friend, ride with someone else, just to keep it fun, to keep it social. And I think, yeah, if you can just try to always keep it interesting, keep it fun, that's the number one ticket for success, I'd say.
And I think that's something that applies to all walks of life, whether you're a pro cyclist or in business. You know, you've got to enjoy what you do. Otherwise, it's probably not the right thing.
For sure.
Awesome. Well, I think at that point, we'll leave it at that. It's been awesome talking to you. As maybe very final thing, really quickly, how's your French? Been in a world tour team with a French world tour team for a while.
Non, je parle bien.
Tu parles bien.
Ah, yeah, it's good. It's good. Oui, j'ai zéro problème avec le français. Juste, j'ai un fort accent, mais à part de ça, c'est bon.
C'est magnifique. C'est magnifique. Yeah, I was going to say, after so many years in a French world tour team, you kind of have to speak the lingo. So, it's pretty cool. Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you guys. No, it's a pleasure to be here.
It was a great episode. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Larry. If you want to follow us on our social medias, you can find us on every platform you can imagine. And just make sure to also follow Larry and the team on their socials, because they give a lot of insights and you see a lot of cool stuff about racing and all new technology things. So, I think we close this episode now, and we will be back pretty soon with another episode, and we hope you liked it. If you liked it, give us a thumbs up, because Spotify is also a social media platform right now. So give us a thumbs up when you liked it, and have a great time. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Daniel.